What's up, guys? I'm Evan Turner, co-host of the Point Forward podcast, alongside Andre Iguodala. We got a special series out now, all about our favorite NBA cities, the greatest places to travel, the evolving cultures and cuisines, and some of our most memorable experiences while we were on the road during our many years in the NBA. We talk about Miami, Chicago, New York, and many more. Tune in to Courts and Culture, the Point Forward Travel Guide, sponsored by Hennessy. You can find it on Point Forward Feed on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 283 of the Talking Chop podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland. It is deep into the night here on Monday. In fact, it will be Tuesday on the East Coast by the time we're done recording. And because it's a very, very late hour, you know I'm joined by Scott Coleman, the West Coast correspondent. Hello, sir.
Brad, I've totally jinxed tonight's game. We were cruising along through six or seven innings, and of course, I thought, this is going to go to extra innings tonight, knowing that it was already going to be on the late side for you. And of course, it goes to the 10th. And it felt like the last three innings of tonight's game took like 7 hours to complete. But here we are, you're a pro's pro doing this so late. And there is some good stuff to talk about.
Yeah, good stuff in the middle of a bunch of maddening losses. That's been kind of the story of the season so far for the Braves, is like every game they've lost has been pretty maddening slash frustrating, and that was encapsulated by the last two, Sunday night and now tonight on Monday. We'll get to those in a second. I do want to plug one thing at the top. Eric, friend of the podcast, fellow co-host Eric Cole, interviewed Michael Harris, who is like America's favorite prospect right now. So that's on the feed. If you missed it, it's on this same feed. Subscribe to the podcast. You will hear that interview from earlier last week, and my apologies on having the podcast a little bit delayed this week, but it's Monday night. And I'm glad that I'm kind of glad. Other than it's very late, it's good that we have the live reaction to this baseball game.
I'm sure we could come up with two worse ways to lose baseball games than the way Sunday night's game ended and then tonight's game. I'm sure we could come up with a worst way to lose, but I mean, we're pretty near the top here, Brad. I don't know what it is. Anytime we do one of these, it's rarely like, oh, hey, they're on a 4-game winning streak and they just walked off a win.
Especially like compared to, in the regular season, especially, like, I guess you could argue that you and I and Eric have responded to some historic playoff defeats. But other than that, these two are pretty much designed in the lab to be pretty frustrating. I think Braves fans are on the edge of their seats in a bad way at the moment. At any rate, we'll start at the beginning. We'll go through a little bit of stuff earlier in the week that's, we'll go through quickly, I guess, at the top here. The first loss, that's our last podcast, was Tuesday. And they hit four home runs in the first three innings and lost, which is not something you normally see. That was the one time that it was not the offense that was the problem. Drew Smiley got beat up a little bit. He wasn't too bad in that game, and we'll come back to him later on in the week. But the bullpen got rocked. They got six outs and allowed nine base runners, which is not a good ratio. That feels like it was a long time ago, but it did tie the Braves' longest losing streak in the last four seasons when they opened 0-4, and their first 0-4 start since 2012. Now, they were good in 2012, so that's a positive sign, but it feels like a long time ago, but they were 0-4, so things could be worse, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't know it at the time, but as you just kind of alluded to, it's been kind of the theme of the season so far. It's just some frustrating close losses, and maybe it's selective memory, but it sure felt like over the last couple of seasons, the Braves just seemingly somehow found a way to sneak out those games where they were tied in the eighth inning and all those last at bat wins and comeback wins. And again, we are through 10 games after tonight. For football terms, it's the equivalent of almost being done with week one is where we're at in terms of like a percentage of the season being done. So, of course, it's still so early, but when you do lose a couple of frustrating games like they have, like the one a week ago, especially to Max Scherzer. You said four home runs off Max Scherzer. You think, wow, we're probably going to win this one. And then, of course, the bullpen imploded.
Yeah, not ideal. But things got better from there. Wednesday was a good day. Wednesday was a doubleheader, a seven-inning doubleheader, which is, I enjoy those. Honestly, they're kind of breezy, although it's a lot of baseball.
That's the only rule, the new rule since last year that I like genuinely like. Like I enjoy those 7-inning games.
I mean they kind of fly by and then you get a little break and then you do it again and it's like, all right, this is kind of it's a full day for sure. Yeah. But it's kind of nice.
It's still 14 innings. Like you feel like you're not robbed of a game, right? Like after 7 innings, it's kind of fun. I think it almost makes a little bit more of an emphasis on the earlier innings because you know that, of course, you're playing two fewer innings that day. So I do enjoy that rule, I think.
Yeah, and it was kind to the Braves this time. Game one, they actually had to come back. Free gave up 4 runs in the bottom of the first, including a home run to Turner, and they kind of had to, like, come alive from there. But the offense got going. The guys who actually, Ender almost hit a home run in that game, game one. That was a funny moment. And then Freed actually had an RBI single helping himself with some BABIP luck. But, I mean, that was a comeback win. Freed actually had kind of a scary moment. He got hit in the leg with a ball. It was a pretty crazy two-inning stretch, honestly, before that. But he ended up coming out of the game. It was precautionary. He was also pretty bad in the game. In fact, Freed's allowed 7 runs and 17 base runners in 7 innings.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying you panic about Max Freed, but if you're looking at something that's a little bit scary from Wednesday, it was probably that Max Freed has not been good so far.
Yeah, his command has been off. Now, maybe it's just shaking off the rust still. Maybe it's they brought him along a little bit slower in the spring and he's still just not, you know, 100% ready to go. But yeah, he hasn't been great. He was able to escape some damage in Philadelphia in opening day. And as you just said, he was not very sharp early on in the Washington game. Hopefully it's just a blip on the radar and he's able to kick it in gear in Tuesday's game. I believe he's scheduled to start against Miami, but he has not been great.
No. And again, it's early, no concerns for me just yet, but that is something to circle. But the bullpen, after giving it up on Monday, came back and was awesome in game one of that game. It was actually a game one on Wednesday. 4 scoreless innings from Tomlin, Jones, and Minter. Jones and Minter, not so good tonight, we'll say. But they were pretty good on Wednesday. Game two was pretty breezy. It was a 2-0 game. The Braves won despite only having 3 hits. And the only runs of the game came from the bat of our favorite pinch hitter, Pablo Sandoval. One of the only guys on the team that's been good at the plate this season. Pablo Sandoval. Saving grace to this point.
Like, him and Ronnie are single-handedly the reason the Braves have won 4 games so far. Like, if Ronald Acuna wasn't out of his mind and Pablo hadn't had the couple, I know they lost the first game, he hit the homer, but man, those two guys are like the only hitters who have really shown up. I know Freddie's had a couple of homers and... But really, yeah, man, it's been a rough going. I looked today, I think the Braves were 26th in team WRC+, after scoring 3 runs tonight. I'm guessing it's probably gone down. They had like 4 hits all night tonight. So it has not been good to the bats. Again, it's still so early. But as you said, at least this was one where it was a low-scoring game that they won.
Yeah, to your point, after the first 2 series when the Braves were 2-4, they had a team WRC+ of 51. So... Oof. Yeah. That's not what you want in general. Ooh. And if you removed Acuna and Sandoval, I'm not sure how bad it would be, but it would have been very unsightly. The other bright spot from Wednesday's game, too, and he was another bright spot tonight, was Ynoa has been awesome. First start, 5 innings, 2 hits, no runs. Tonight he was awesome as well. We'll come back to that later on. But he had never even completed more than 4 innings in a start. Even the game 3 heroics in the playoffs against the Dodgers, he only threw 4 innings. So he's now thrown, you know, back-to-back career-long outings. And essentially, he's the 5th starter at the moment because Mike Soroka is going to be out for a little bit longer. Bryce Wilson's still stretched out, but it's Ynoa. And with this start tonight, I think he's just going to be there for a while, it looks like.
Yeah, you know, I guess shame on me. I guess I didn't realize that Ynoa had some pretty decent prospect pedigree coming up. I mean, I know they traded for him. And, of course, it was the era when John Coppola was collecting every
Wheeling
pitching
and dealing.
Prospect, yeah, every pitching prospect in the world, and good on him. It obviously has worked out with the handful of arms he's gotten. But man, this is a pro Ynoa podcast. I think we've talked about how the stuff is just so good, and again, it's just a matter of control. But through 2 starts, he has not seen a great lineup. I mean, he was facing, the Nationals lineup in that doubleheader was basically Juan Soto, Trey Turner, and a bunch of bums. I mean, literally, that's what it was. And then the Marlins lineup is not very good either. But nonetheless, 2 starts in, he has been terrific. And honestly, other than Charlie Morton, he's probably looked better than anybody else in the rotation. And
yeah.
I, I can't imagine taking him out anytime soon, even if Mike Soroka does get back, and we'll talk about him in a little bit. He might be forcing his way into the rotation for good, and that's certainly a welcome it's not a problem, but a good problem to have.
Yeah, you can't have too many good arms. And even before tonight's game, Snicker said that he was going to pitch at least one more time after today. I think he's going to go over the weekend. So I'm expecting that to even grow more after the way he pitched tonight. So a bright spot, we'll come back to him later on as well. The other thing that was noteworthy was that Sean Newcomb has been awesome in the bullpen. Yeah. He struck out the side, throwing in the upper 90s on Wednesday, like just looking like a new man. And I know people are starting to at me. I was proud because people were remembering our pro Newcomb bullpen takes and shouting us out for those. I'm not going to take a victory lap just yet, but he looks pretty good in the bullpen so far. I'm my fingers are crossed as we speak right now. But I actually want to say this last thing before I let you talk. I wonder if he was unavailable tonight because both he and Matzik did not pitch, and Nate Jones was left out there to die, and they had Grant Dayton warming up. So I'm going to hope that Newcomb and Matzik were not available tonight. Just saying.
Yeah, probably. I mean, the downside or one of the downsides of playing all these close games is the bullpen is just getting taxed like crazy.
Yep.
And it's a long season. As we know, it's a 6-month marathon. And I feel like every game, I mean, literally every game but one has been within, I think, a couple of runs. I know there was, I think, half of the Braves games so far have been decided either by one run or in extra innings. They had that one game against the Phillies the other night where they won convincingly, and then they had a loss that was, I think, 4-0 or 5-0 that second game of the year. But, man, every night's felt like it's been a real grind. And, of course, you can't just rely so heavily on your better arms in the bullpen. And, like you said, then you're just leaving Nate Jones and Jacob Webb and those types out there, and they're just not always going to get the job done.
Yeah, to your point there, Will Smith pitched again tonight. That was his third consecutive day. So I can't imagine he's pitching tomorrow. Oh, wow.
No.
I kind of guessed this and ended up being wrong on Twitter during the game tonight, but I thought when they left Jones in there, even brought Jones in, I thought it was because Smith had already gone 2 days in a row and maybe they were trying to save Matzik for the ninth, but Smith ended up pitching. So he's not throwing 4 days in a row, I don't think. So you'd imagine he'll be unavailable on Tuesday, but that's something to keep an eye on too. Like they're having to tax guys in the way that you were talking about there. All right, let's go to the most positive single game so far was the home opener on Friday, an 8-1 victory. They actually were trailing after 4.5 innings, and then the offense actually came alive, led by Charlie Morton with a single. Shout out to Charlie Morton, his first hit in like multiple years because he's been in the American League. But then Acuna continues to be incredible. We'll come back to him later on too. But a 2-run homer there, he blasts one. Ozzie doubles. Darno drives him in. They break it open in the sixth inning with, and by the way, Acuna makes another absurd catch defensively in the sixth inning. And then the Phillies kicked it around a little bit. Shouts to Alec Boehm. I'm not even sure how to say his name. The guy, he can't play defense, honestly. It's kind of remarkable how bad he is. Only against the Braves, though. It seems like he's not that bad against anybody else. If you look at the numbers, it's like, why is this guy so bad? And then every time he plays the Braves, he just forgets how to play baseball, which is... Fortunate, I'll say. And then Adrianza bombs to break the game open. So that was fun.
Yeah, we questioned the bench. So far, the bench has not been a problem at all. Like, honestly, it's been biggest.
Well, Ender exists, but yes.
Well, yeah, but we...
I agree with you, though, overall. Sandoval and Adrianza have been awesome.
Yes, yeah. And I think, my real takeaway from the home opener was just how great was it to have fans back in the stadium.
Like, yeah, it was rocking.
I know a couple. I think the ESPN broadcast crew even noted last night on the national broadcast that even though there's only like, 9,000 people at the stadium, like it was rocking, like the equivalent of like, it felt like there was 30,000-40,000 people there. And maybe it helps that the tickets are more limited, so you have fans who are really, really into it because they're paying a premium to get those select seats. But man, just really nice to have fans. I know I was listening to the radio broadcast tonight, and Joe Simpson said it was hard for these guys. These guys are used to playing in front of 40,000-50,000 people most nights. And then last year, of course, they're playing in a stadium with like 4 people in the entire stands. And it's hard to get up for it again. I know it had to be done a year ago, but I noticed just how wonderful it was to have fans in the stands making noise. And it just adds an element to the game that you can't replace with pumped in crowd noise and cardboard cutouts and all that.
Yeah, I had a couple of friends that were there that I talked to either during or after games this weekend, and also just the media people that were there as well. Like, it had a feeling like it was kind of back. It's not jam packed yet, like you said, but there's been good energy. It's obviously early in the year, so people are enjoying, especially just kind of being back for the first time. Like, I know ticket prices were kind of through the roof from what I heard on secondary market and all that stuff too. But it's yeah, hopefully that continues and it just gives you a little bit of a jolt at home. Last of the wins before we get to a break, they win 5-4 on Saturday. That was kind of a weird game too, like a lot of back and forth. They actually went down early, and then Freddie hit a 2-run bomb, and then they ended up winning the game at the end. It's sort of this strange comebacker by Freddie that ended up scoring the winning run. Just kind of a bizarre game. Like Anderson was just like fine. He wasn't very good at the outset, but Newcomb was great again. I don't know. Saturday was like the most. The game that I have no real takes on. It was just like the most boring game. Other than actually, it wasn't boring. It was back and forth. It just wasn't like anything that was crazy to take away from it. Other than Freddie's still good, which is good.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the overall theme of the first 10 games for the Braves is the offense has really been
Whew.
home run or bust. I mean, that's really what it comes down to, and that's fine. Like you have Acuña who's out of his mind, and Freddie's hit for some power, and you've gotten a couple from a few other guys. But man, it really does feel like if they're not getting bailed out by a home run, there's just not much going on right now. And I guess if you're looking for a positive, I think they're still making pretty good contact and all of that. But yeah, it has not been great through the first 10 days of the season.
No, it is not. That is for sure. Okay, before we get to the real headliners, which was two maddening losses on Sunday and Monday, a word from our sponsor on the podcast. So hold on tight. We'll be right back.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Beloved brands know customer relationships are everything. That's why over 130,000 trust Klaviyo to power smarter digital relationships across their websites, emails, SMS, and reviews. And now there's Klaviyo AI, your guide to smarter insights, decisions, work, and results. Brands like Everyman Jack trust Klaviyo AI to personalize product recommendations that keep customers coming back. Discover Klaviyo AI at klaviyo.com/box. That's klaviyo.com/box.
All right, Scott, let us dive in to Sunday's game, which was memorable for all the wrong reasons. We'll start at sort of just the game flow here. Acuña just does crazy stuff every night right now. He beats out an infield single early, and then he hit the, I mean, this one, I'm not sure if you saw this live. He hit the ball 109 miles an hour, which is very hard, directly at the shortstop. The shortstop fields it cleanly, throws cleanly on the mark, and Acuña beats it out. That's one of the more insane things I've ever seen from a right-handed batter. Honestly, I mean, I don't want to go too crazy here, but if you watch that ball off, if you watch that on the regular camera, just the way he hit it, and realize it went right at a guy who threw the ball full speed to first, and he beat that out as a right-handed batter, like. That isn't supposed to happen, man. That's supposed to be a very easy out. Like crazy.
His speed is like elite of the elite. Like the 1% of the 1%. And it helps too that he's really good. Like he's not like Billy Hamilton, where his only real skill was just running really fast. Like the dude is out of his mind. The other thing too, Acuña is like a pretty big guy. Like he's not just like this little pipsqueak who's fast. I mean, he is well built and absolutely flies. I think somebody had his sprint speed is 30 seconds a foot or 30 feet a second or something like that.
Yeah, that's
crazy.
It.
Like just flying. So yeah, I saw that too. I only saw bits and pieces of the game on Sunday night, but
I'm telling
you. I did see that.
That was just insane. You know me. I'm not going to come on here and be like just overflowing ridiculous about stuff. That blew my mind. That play actually like broke my brain. Because if you watch the replay enough times, that looks like every ground ball you've ever seen that the guy's out by 10 feet at first. And he beat it out. It was insane. Anyway, the Braves ended up leading 3-0 pretty quickly after Ozzy bombs. But then the Phillies come alive against Drew Smyly. And Smiley's, I know we're very pro Drew Smyly, and we still are, because there's some context here. He's thrown 11 innings, only 10 base runners, which is good. You know, a sub-1 whip is really nice. But 3 home runs and 7 earned runs because of the homers in this game. And in this game, it was a pair of 2 strike pitches. He was ahead 1-2 on Gregorius. Ooh. And actually, it was 0-2 and then a 1-2 pitch that actually got hit out. Then it was he was ahead 1-2 on Hoskins, went to a full count. So at the end of the day, Smiley's not been terribly effective. His ERA is not very good. But he has like a low 3s xFIP. Like, I'm not worried about Drew Smyly right now, but it's a little bit frustrating with the long ball so far.
It feels like he's close. Like, he's like a pitch or 2 or 3. And, I mean, yes, we could do this for everyone. But it really does feel like through 2 starts and a small sample, be damned, it feels like he's been close to putting together 2 really good starts. The strikeouts are good. The command has been good. He's not really walking anyone. But, again, if you give up a couple homers, all of a sudden your really good start turns into a not-so-great start. Again, he's going to be high profile all season long just because of the 1-year free agent contract, and it opened some eyes and all of that. But, I mean, he hasn't been bad. I mean, I guess that's an encouraging sign. And realistically, he's assuming Mike Soroka gets back within the next month or so. He's the 5th starter on the team. So if he can give some consistent 5th starts every 5 days, I think you take it. But again, you do hope that he's able to limit the 1 or 2 things that seem to hurt him every night. He's been close to being really good, but so far it just hasn't materialized.
Yeah, I'm just not concerned. I wanted to say that. Well, and I know we're sort of in the bag for Drew Smyly compared to the consensus, but I think he's largely been fine. So I wanted to say that out loud. I may not continue, but no concerns for me just yet. Anyway, Freddie homers to tie the game. His 3rd straight game with a home run. He actually had 4 homers in 20 plate appearances. So Freddie's been one of the only guys hitting, along with Ronnie and Pablo. But then Bryce Harper hits a home run to 6-5. So the Braves are now losing in the 6th. Ronnie then ties it with another crazy home run, a 428-foot blast. His 4th home run in 38 plate appearances. At that point, he was slugging in the mid-950s. Not OPS. Jeez. Slugging. We'll talk about his numbers, which actually have gotten better since then, which is insane. But that happened. But then, of course, the controversial play in the 9th. So, I mean, what are you going to say here? I think I'm sure anybody listening to this podcast has seen the play by now, if they missed it live, because it was, you know, it was a night game, all that stuff. It was one of those times where, even nationally, this is not a Braves partisan thing. I don't think I saw anyone nationally that was not Philly-based say that this is the right decision and the right result at the end of the game. Buster Olney, who is like not known for his blazing takes, was like calling for MLB to apologize the next day. So that kind of tells you how this all went. I mean, to go to a review after this and still rule it an out, not rule it an out, was something. I'm not even sure what to say about it. It was the wrong result. The Braves they could have lost the game later for sure, but a way to lose the way they did there was pretty much indefensible. Like, why even have replay was the question everyone was asking. I had the same question. Why even have replay?
Well, they asked Alec Bohm. You said it's not a partisan thing. They asked Alec Bohm after the game if he was safe, and even he was like, "Oh, the umpire called me."
He basically said the umpire called me safe. That's all that matters, which is like what you say, I guess. But man, that was he was not convinced that he was safe.
I mean, even he was like, "No, my front toe got the bat." I mean, he knows, he was right there. It was horrible, as you said. Buster Olney came out, said something. It was really what everyone was talking about. They have to do something with replay. It's been whispered forever that ever since they instituted it, the umpires in New York don't want to show up their buddies and overturn the call. And if it's close, they don't want to do it. And it is such a case-by-case basis. And look, if they have additional camera angles that the TVs don't, then come out and show those during replays. I mean, I just don't understand it. I realize that no one's perfect, and in real time, it was a close play. I don't fault the home plate umpire. Like, it was a bang-bang play.
Calling it wrong on the field is, like, not that big of a deal. It's fine. I mean,
it was close.
Yeah.
I mean, and, you know, yes, we have the benefit of the ESPN replay where it's slowed down and we see it 25 times at four or five different angles. Like, I get it. It's a bang-bang play. This was not a blatantly obvious, you know. I don't know what can be done realistically. I know that Mark Bowman was tweeting a little bit and that the Braves were chatting about potentially providing the replays to umpires, but the umpires wouldn't know the call on the field. I don't know how logistically you do that, because in the video you're going to see the umpire make a ruling.
And it goes back to the NFL thing, like the whole defaulting to the call on the field, unless you, whatever the wording is, like in indisputable evidence, I think is what they always say in the NFL. And like, this is a case where I think it was pretty indisputable, but they just always seem to lean on the call man on the field at a rate that is just too high, which I think backs up what Bowman and others were saying about this. Like, it didn't seem like they want to overturn anything, which is funny because they actually did it tonight. On a pretty questionable call.
I have given up. I mean, when I saw it live, I thought he was safe. And watching the replay, I didn't see anything that was like clear and convincing, which is their whole thing. As you said, it's similar to football where it has to be like blatantly obvious.
If you believe in makeup calls, that was the one for you. If you're a makeup call enthusiast, I think that was one that you could file on your side, because that felt like one. But anyway, I mean, I think everyone's on the same page. It's kind of ironic. I just think there's not even a take to have here. Like, it's obviously the wrong call. The wrong result happens on a night. The Braves still could have lost for sure. It wasn't like a win loss proposition, but to lose like that is just enraging. And you know, honestly, the quotes coming out of the locker room, the clubhouse, whatever you want to say, after the game, Snicker, the players, like, I know Smiley was fired up. Like, no one was happy.
No.
And it might even carry over tonight. I'm not sure if they're like in a good mood even today. I'm sure they probably weren't. Just like losing like that to a division rival and knowing like on the video that you got screwed. It's just not fun for anybody.
Well, and in a high-profile game. I mean, the Phillies certainly
look... ESPN.
National television, Sunday night. The Phillies look good. I mean, this is not... If this was a game between the Pirates and the Tigers in the middle of August, like, no one's going to care as much, right? Like, yeah, it was a bad call. It's a black eye for the umps. But, I mean, that was a high-profile game. It's the first or the second Sunday night game of the year. You have two big markets going at it, and... Yeah, just horrible. I don't know what the solution is. Maybe it's getting a third party involved so you don't have like umpires being asked to rat or to overturn their buddies or whatever it is. The protect the brotherhood is always brought up by the broadcast. And, I don't know, man. It was a good thing. I wasn't able to watch the game live. I was at dinner with some family friends and man, it's probably good.
Better
I didn't
off.
Get to see it live. I probably would have said some bad things.
You might have been banned from Twitter last night if that had happened. If you, I mean, knowing that you're disposed to firing off some things when you're frustrated during Braves games, you might be banned right now from Twitter. Yeah.
So I'd be shadow banned.
I'm glad you were not available. I'm glad you were not around for all of that.
I'd get my burner going. Yeah.
I actually tapped. I was not live tweeting, and that was good for me too. Not that I was going to say anything too crazy, but I was purposely not online during the game. I was keeping an eye on it, but it was brutal.
Yeah.
We've said enough, I think, but everyone knows what happened there, and not fun. And then tonight, a new series begins.
4 hours in, Brad.
Against the favorite Marlins. We all love the Marlins. We all love the Marlins, don't we? Don Mattingly gets ejected. Everyone's favorite manager, Don Mattingly, gets ejected. I actually forgot this happened. Right. I tweeted about Mattingly because he pitched to Acuna late, and I couldn't believe they did it. And I was like, oh, wait. Somebody's like, he got ejected. I'm like, oh, yeah. I forgot about that. I mean, we're going to go through the entire game here, but lots of back and forth with Ronald doing Ronald things. There was a successful sack bunt, which was foreshadowing from Ender in the seventh, that ended up getting the Braves insurance run after a fantastic at bat by Pablo Sandoval, who's been awesome. He drew a 10-pitch walk. That was fun. Acuna then walks to load the bases. They get the insurance run on a sack fly by Ozzie that almost went out of the ballpark. And if that goes over the fence, that's the game winner probably. But then Panda gets thrown out. I'm not sure what he was doing. if we're being honest. Not to pick on him either, because he's been awesome this year, but not a base running enthusiast, and I don't know what he was even trying to do.
Yeah.
Thoughts? I have no takes myself, but where was
he
going?
I don't know. It kind of looked like Ron Washington was maybe waving to him or I don't know. I mean, it's kind of been a microcosm of the entire season. Like, bases loaded, one out.
They got a run, but, oh man.
And you miss a grand slam by 2 feet as former Brave Adam Duvall, who was non-tendered 4 months ago.
Who also bombed, by the way.
Yes, who also homered the Adam Duvall revenge game. Ozzie misses a grand slam by 2 feet. Pablo gets thrown out at second base doing whatever he was doing. God bless him. And then the Braves, the bullpen blows it in the eighth inning and they lose with the annoying new extra innings runner rule. Like, that's basically been the first 10 days of the season in a nutshell. They've been close, and obviously it worked out to an extent. Ozzie at least got one runner in, but they've had basically an opportunity in every game except for one so far to win the game, to blow it open, and they just haven't been able to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what happens if Pablo doesn't get thrown out there, but that didn't help. I mean, but at the same time, they're up 3-1. Like, you're supposed to win that game, up 3-1 after that. They actually get the break in the eighth with the hilarious review that we talked about earlier, which I think they probably should have lost that review, but they ended up winning it. Minter walks 3 guys. He did not look good. That was not an encouraging performance. It's only one outing, but man, he was not good. Then Nate Jones comes in. As we said earlier, he's not looked sharp to me overall necessarily. And then I just have to assume that guys like Madsic and Newcomb were not available. I know it was a bunch of right-handed hitters, so maybe that was the reason. But even I personally, in my personal power rankings, I have Jacob Webb ahead of Nate Jones. I would have liked to see him Webb. I know for whatever reason, the Braves do not seem to love Jacob Webb. This goes back to last year when he was kind of just like not pitching, even though he was pitching very well. So that's one little thing. But then especially when Jones comes in, gives up a 2-run double to tie it right away. Then he walks back-to-back guys, so he can come out at that point because he's faced 3 batters. He looked terrible, but finally got kind of lucky and couldn't throw a strike still, but gave up a line out to center. The Braves really were fortunate in the eighth. They had 5 walks in the inning and a double, and only 2 runs because the guy got because the review went their way. So they probably should have lost the game in the eighth, if we're being honest.
Yeah.
What do you think about Nate Jones coming in? Because like, maybe am I overreacting? Was it? No, I would not have brought Nate Jones in that game. And I said that I was first guessing. I was like, I'm not sure why he's coming in here in a high leverage spot in the eighth inning.
You know, I guess maybe they. I mean, clearly Brian Snicker must trust him a little bit more than Jacob Webb at this point. I mean, I would.
That is obvious.
So, and
yes,
Tyler Matzik, and if Matzik and Newcomb weren't available tonight, which seems.
I just have to think at least Matzik was not available because he would have pitched in the eighth. You have to think he would have.
Yeah, and you do have the extended bullpen right now. So, as you said, it's a miracle it wasn't like a blowout game right then and there. You walk 5 guys in an inning and have a double. It's like mathematically hard to only score 2 runs. Again, it was just a frustrating game really from that point on, and the Braves had a million chances to put it away and the bullpen was not sharp. And I don't know. I'm not sure why they keep going to Nate Jones in these prime spots. I said before the season, I mean, Chris Martin is the only good right-handed arm they have in that bullpen.
And he's hurt.
And it's not like he's like Iron Man and he's thrown 70 innings for the last decade every single year. Like, he's been prone to weird little injuries here and there his entire time. He's in his late 30s or mid-late 30s. He's hurt. When he's hurt and not effective, everybody moves up a rung. And when you only have one good right-handed arm in the bullpen, it's a problem. I still didn't get it. I don't know why they didn't add another right-handed arm before the season began.
Shane Green is asking for $15 million a year, I think, at this point.
Yeah, otherwise, Shane Green, who was wandering around Truist Park on Sunday night, apparently. I don't know if you saw those photos.
I actually did not see that. Was that really a thing? He was there?
Yeah, he was walking around, and there was a picture with him.
Does he want to play baseball?
I guess he's hanging out at the – who knows what he was doing. But, yeah, I think a couple people saw him just, like, walking the concourse. It's okay. Not the worst time to, yeah, odd. But yes,
alas,
Shane Greener elsewhere, it has not been good from the right side. I guess we can say the left side's been great for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, the bullpen's actually, I don't want to pile on too much, because coming into tonight, the bullpen was top five in the majors in both WAR and ERA. So the bullpen as a whole has been good until today, basically.
It's funny. Statistically, they've been good, but I feel like they're terrible.
Yeah, like, I agree. And that's why I said that, because there was a lot of like, oh, this bullpen's terrible. And I get it. They were not good tonight, especially that eighth inning was frustrating. And that's why I wanted to point out, like, sometimes your eye, and this happens to me too, like sometimes your eyes kind of fool you and the numbers are much better than the eyes tell you. And this is one of those things, like the bullpen has not felt dominant to me, but what are you going to do that when they're top five in the league in numerous stats coming into the night? So it's all small sample size. Who knows? But without Minter, right? I mean, sorry, without Martin right now, it doesn't feel great. That's for sure. It does not feel like a dominant bullpen. And we were already worried about the bullpen's depth. And then you take out one of the four guys that we actually trusted. That's not ideal. Last thing on this game was the chance to score in the bottom of the ninth that went begging. The first two pitches of the inning were hit by pitches, which is not a frequent occurrence, I don't think. I was trying to think of another scenario which that's happened, and I'm sure it has, but it didn't. It's not normal. So suddenly, and it's Riley and Jackson, who are not two guys who are scalding hot at the moment. No. They get on base for free, and then on the broadcast, I'm not trying to pick on anybody here, but there was a pretty jovial celebration by the broadcast that Ender was going to come up to bunt. They were really excited about the possibility to bunt there. Like, oh, this guy can bunt. Here comes Ender Inciarte. And then he struck out bunting.
Womp, womp, womp.
That was bad. I mean, honestly, if you are insistent on bunting, which I would not be, but I know people love to bunt, Ender is one of the guys you would want up there to bunt. He just didn't get it down. Ender, at least he has experience bunting, is all I'll say. He has bunted several times in the past. This is not like you're having Ozuna bunt in the ninth inning. So it wasn't so bad. I'm okay with bunting there because Ender is not a good hitter. So I'm okay with him bunting there. I don't think you have to. I wasn't excited about it in the way the broadcast was, but it's okay to bunt. He didn't get it down. That was the first problem. Then Adrianza pops up. Not ideal either. They pitched to Acuna, which I couldn't believe, honestly.
I couldn't either.
Because, first base is not open, but it's two outs in the bottom of the ninth, so nobody matters other than the guy at the plate. And I guess the rationale would be you don't want to have the guy go to third, and maybe you get a pass. The only rationale is like the pass ball stuff, which is possible given the control of the pitcher. I do understand that. But with the way that Ronnie is hitting and the way that Ozzie is not hitting, I would have never pitched to Acuna there. And granted, they pitched around him and walked him, so maybe that was the plan all along. But there were a couple pitches that were in the zone in that inning, in that play appearance even. So I love that as a Braves fan. I love seeing them pitch to Acuna there. He ends up walking, and then Ozzie rolls one over, and they go to extra innings. And I'm not just saying this, because this is a point that we both made a number of times. It would have been very nice to have Freddie Freeman at the plate there. So that's all I'm saying.
Yeah. It's funny. You and I were talking about this as the game was going on. I think we have seen in the last couple games the reasoning for hitting Freddie second, and I think you can argue it both ways. Honestly, I do, but I don't know, man. It was just a...
We would say it for a long time. Too.
Yeah. And Ozzie, God love him. Love the player. But if it's between Freddie and Ozzie right now, especially Ozzie batting left-handed, where he is significantly inferior to Freddie.
I mean, Ozzie's awesome, but there's just no... I don't know. I mean, I get all the arguments, I guess. But and this is, again, we're not picking up... We love Ozzie. Ozzie's very, very, very good. But sometimes it's kind of simple math, and you want your best players to hit the most, and your best players are Ronald Acuna and Freddie Freeman. And it's one of those times where it feels like cherry picking, because the game literally ended essentially on Ozzie at the plate and Freddie on the on-deck circle without a bat. That was a funny visual, by the way, because if you just do the math, like, Freddie can't come to the plate there. So he's standing in the on-deck circle without a bat, which is just like some of the funniest things you'll ever see. But yeah, it's a good reminder of like, one of the reasons why you would want Freddie to hit second. It's not the only reason, but one of the reasons is that, you know, 10, 15 times a year, the guy hitting third is not going to get to the plate because the guy hitting second is going to be the last out. And that happens like a handful of times per season. This is one of those times. So anyway, honestly, Jacob Webb got a little bit unlucky in the 10th.
Yeah.
It wasn't great, but like if you look at the contact numbers, they were not belting the ball off of Jacob Webb. The first two hits were like not roped. And the first was should have been caught by Ozzie. I'm not sure why that was ruled a hit. That was probably an error on Ozzie, I thought.
Yeah, I did too. I was surprised.
Tough play,
by that.
But yeah. Like he's gotta make that play. Especially for a gold glove caliber second baseman, he's gotta make that play. And that's not why they lost, but that was not ideal. And then Webb gives up like in the two hits, like one of them just like barely found the line on down the third base line. So a little bit unlucky stuff from Webb, but he actually did some heroes work. We almost started recording, just to be candid. We were talking about recording because it was second and third at 5-3 with no outs, and obviously the win probability there is quite low. But Webb gets out of it at 5-3, and that was like, all right, they have a little bit of a chance here. They avoided disaster. You got a guy in second, went down two runs, but nothing happening from the bats. From
that no, it, again, it's selective because I'm sure there's been points where the Braves have had a couple of little bloops or dinkers go and find grass. But, man, it feels like in every loss, the Braves have had some unfortunate bounces go their way, as you said. I guess it was a difficult play for Ozzie to make, but to give up one on a broken bat or whatever it was, and then a ball that was maybe an inch fair down the line, it's just a rough way to lose, especially when you had that 3-1 lead late in the game. But it is what it is, and hopefully they'll start to get a few bounces going their way.
Yeah, I concur with that. There was one positive that we should at least mention again. We talked about Ynoa earlier, but Ynoa's numbers are awesome for the year. He struck out 10 in six innings tonight. His stuff was playing up. He's now thrown 12 innings, six hits, one earned run, 15 strikeouts, two walks. Like, that's kind of ridiculous. Not sustainable, you wouldn't think, on this level, but he looks great. So, shouts to him. On the more negative side, I want to just, like, basically, without going through all the numbers, a lot of the batting order has been, like, downright hideous this season. It's basically the guys who have been good are Acuna, Freeman, Darno's been fine, and Sandoval. And that's kind of it. We'll start positive here. Acuna's numbers. Are you ready for this, Scott?
I'm ready. This is, like, the only fun part of this.
His OBP is 500, which is pretty good.
Decent.
His slugging percent, not OPS, slugging percentage is .947. Yep. a 272 WRC plus. He's already over one Fangraphs WAR for the season in 44 plate appearances in 10 games. So he's on pace for 16 plus WAR on the year, which isn't going to happen, but man, that's crazy. Ronnie has been the best player in baseball to this point. Kind of full stop, no debate. He's going to have to cool off at some point, but it's a good reminder of like how talented and kind of crazy he actually is. So there's that. Other than that though, man, I'm going to let you set this up because you actually asked this to Eric and I chimed in on Twitter about Austin Riley's performance. I looked this up, I want to use it on the podcast. I think the question you asked Eric was something like, if you take away the first couple of weeks of 2019, how bad's Austin Riley been?
Mm-hmm.
And I found the numbers. I want you to share them with people.
Ooh, so I say that I want Austin Riley to be successful.
Me
I
too.
Do. Like, I don't like, he's, by all accounts, he works hard. There were reports that, you know, coming up through the minors, he worked incredibly hard on his body to get in better physical shape. Like, I want Austin Riley to be the Braves third baseman for the next half decade. I had my pretty significant doubts coming into the year, and your numbers here since that, really, he had like the first two and a half weeks where he came up and pitchers, for whatever reason, just kept throwing him fastballs and he was launching them.
Yeah.
But since June 5th of 2019, which is about 350 plate appearances, so a decent sample, 94 games, not 2,000 plate appearances, but enough, right? He is batting .213, .272, .359. With a 63 WRC plus and a full negative 1.0 WAR.
And it's probably worse because those numbers were before today. And obviously it's a small sample size, but he was 0 for 4 today as well. So it's probably a little bit worse than that. And again, we're not piling on, and he is not the only guy struggling. The lineup, as we just said, the only guys who are actually hitting, it's easier to name the guys who are hitting than the guys who are struggling. So it's not just Riley. But because we were talking about it and the fact that Riley is, the problems go beyond the last even full calendar year, it's not great. And then you throw in, like, Pache's not ready yet, pretty clearly. He's not hitting so far. It's been of a slow start there. You have Ender who can't hit. You have Dansby struggling a little bit. Ozzy's had a couple flashes, but hasn't been great. Azuna is in a slump early. Like, the lineup has not been good. And it's the question is, like, how many wins would they have if Ronald Acuna was a human, basically? Yeah. They might be 2-8, 1-9. I don't even know.
Yeah, I just saw this come across. Ozzy Albies, who's batted second, I believe, in every game this year. His WRC plus is 1. As a reminder, for those who are not necessarily as familiar with this stat that we use all the time, 100 is average. Correct. And his WRC plus is 1. You don't have to be a math major here to see why that's a problem when historically the number 2 spot in the order is the most important spot in the entire lineup. And you're getting a guy who is, I mean, he's like worse than a pitcher right now at this point. Like, Max Fried is like bare minimum offensively hitting as a pitcher, and his WRC plus is like 30. That's how bad Ozzy has been. And it's not just Ozzy. It's not like he's the only guy not hitting. But you're right. Without Acuna just being a maniac and Freddie hitting a couple homers, like I think Freddie has 1 or maybe 2 hits all year that isn't a home run.
Yeah, he's been like very boomer bust, which is not normally what he does, but it's been happening.
No,
so far.
He's hitting like .140, and yes, like 4 of those are home runs. But again, it's just been weird. Marcelo Ozuna, he did have an RBI single tonight where he hit the ball hard, but Ozuna has not been great.
He almost homered too, by the way. Ozuna had one, was in the 8th inning, that was like 5 feet foul on the left field line that was hammered. He just kind of pulled it a little bit. So
just missed it.
Maybe he's coming out, but we'll see.
Maybe. I mean, Travis d'Arnaud has been pretty good. Dansby has been better in the last couple nights, but he hasn't been great during the first week, especially. He had that one homer off of Max Scherzer, but besides that, it was basically nothing. So, yeah, it's not exclusive to one or two guys struggling, and hopefully, as the weather warms up and they're able to get some consistent at-bats, they're able to pick it up a bit. But, I mean, it really has been just pray that Ronnie hits a homer, and that's it.
Yeah. It's not really a sustainable approach for a contending offense. Listen, I'm not worried. The offense is not concerned to me, but it has not been good so far. And you want some guys to show some stuff. That includes Riley. And, you know, right now, you know, today especially, like, I would probably – like to stagger the Alex Jackson Ender Inciarte combo, which they rolled out tonight together. I don't love to see that. You have to rest Arnaud sometimes for sure, but maybe don't do that the same night that you start Ender. I don't know. Just for the feels of it all. Like,
sure.
Look at the lineup tonight. It's like, man, it kind of just dies at a certain point in the lineup.
If it wasn't the first five, and the first five is setting the world on fire.
Well, true. Yeah. So, yeah, and there's a lot of we all knew that there was a lot riding on the top 5 or 6 guys in the lineup, and it's definitely been that case so far. All right, well, Scott, at the end of this, we'll have some sort of news and notes to hit on here, but that's a lot of game coverage because we have not talked in a week, but there was a lot that happened. At the end of the day, the Braves, it was a relatively productive week. As crazy as that is, the Braves did win 4 games in a row in the middle of the week, so they've actually, they've won 4 out of the last 6, if you want to be as positive as possible. And they could have won all of those games. So they're in fine shape. I mean, they're 4-6. Yeah. Like,
it's not like they're getting blown out.
No, you start 0-4, everyone just kind of nods their head like, all right, they'll come out of this pretty soon. And now they're 4-6, and they're in fine shape. Like, no one's going to be telling you that they're lighting the world on fire, but they're not digging this massive hole. Like, I think Eric and I said last week on the podcast, like, look, unless they're 1-9 next week, like, everything's going to be fine. And they're not 1-9. They're 4-6. It's fine.
Yeah, they're fine. I mean, this roster is too good to have these issues. Again, every game has basically been a coin flip, and they've been on the wrong side of a couple of bad bounces, especially early in the year. I mean, I noted, I know it's been a while since we talked, Brad, but that first week of the year, they had allowed, I think, the second highest batting average on balls in play of anyone in baseball. It was like 360.
Oh, it was
and
unreal.
The league average was 280. So again, I'm not trying to make excuses. The play has been poor. Defense has been a little shaky. The bullpen, again, as I said, while the numbers are pretty solid, it feels like they haven't been great. And it's been a bit of a mixed bag with starting rotation, but this is a good roster, and 4-6 is not great. If the Braves have a 4-6 stretch in the middle of July, maybe we go, oh, they're not playing super well, but you know, whatever. Everything gets magnified in this first month, and fingers crossed they're able to come out of it here sooner than later.
Yep, absolutely. Quickly, the Braves traded for Orlando Arcia last week. He has been at the alternate site. They actually gave up some real value. They gave up Patrick Weigel, which was not like terribly surprising, but a little bit surprising, eyebrow raising. Arcia was once kind of a big prospect for the Brewers. He's not been great in the majors, but he's a professional level backup infielder, basically like a do-it-all guy. He's not a great hitter by any means. He was pretty good last year in a small sample size for the Brewers, but I think he's better on paper than what Adrianza and Camargo give you, which is kind of the theory I think behind that. But what did you make of that transaction?
Just kind of a weird trade when it happened the day after, not even the day, like 12 hours after Fernando Tatis blew out his shoulder. I think like the whole baseball world was like, oh, the Padres are going to get him for a month or two. And then it was like the Braves are acquiring him. And I was like, well, that's weird. Like the only bench players we have that are halfway decent are infielders. Like what's,
And then, of course, like a lot of the questions that we got were like, why is he in the minors then if you're trading? Like, yeah. not a huge haul, but Patrick Weigel is a guy people like. Like, they traded guys people recognize and then sent him to the alternate set. So he's still there now. So, like, it's a week now. It's not like it was like a two-day, let's get acquainted and then we'll bring him up. I don't know what's going on there. It doesn't bother me at all. I mean, the trade was fine, but it's a bit strange for sure.
Yeah, maybe it was a little bit of 40-man roster clutter that they were trying to clear up. I mean, Chad Sabatka, he's never going to be a thing.
R.I.P.
And Patrick Weigel, yeah, we'll always have those 2 weeks in September of 2018 with Chad Sabatka.
Throwing seeds at like 101 or whatever he was doing. He actually was quite good for a little bit.
Let it rip, baby. Let it rip.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just an odd trade. I guess because there is some injury risk with Dansby, maybe they wanted a little bit more of a proven or established middle infielder. As you said, Arcia did have some prospect pedigree, though it's been years since then. It's not like he's a year or two removed from it. But
what's he, 20? Yeah, he's 26. So
yeah, so he's not an old man. I mean, maybe there's something there. He has flashed some power, pretty good defensively. Maybe it was just the Braves trying to clear up some roster clutter. Who knows? But ultimately, it was a move I was a bit surprised by, especially since it happened like 4 days into the season. It was like, what changed? In 4 days, you decided to make this move. But ultimately, I'd imagine he'll join the big league team at some point and presumably be like the second or third pinch hitting option off the bench. But just kind of an odd deal all the way around.
Yeah, that's well said. The other trade they made was for Edgar Santana on Friday. In exchange for cash consideration, Santana was actually quite good and has been good in his entire career. Actually, has a low threes ERA, but he has not pitched in a long time. He missed 2019 with Tommy John and then had a PED suspension that he's actually still serving. So that's a depth move in the bullpen. He's got a pretty good arm. The numbers are good from a couple years ago, but that's obviously a big question mark. It seems like Anthopoulos is just like kind of willing to wheel and deal on the margins this year, which is fine. That's kind of what I think he probably should be doing, given that we assume that they're kind of cash strapped, so they can't really spend money, I don't think. Maybe they'll sign Shane Green tonight. We won't know that. But for now, I think we have to assume they don't have a ton of money. So like he's just kind of like taking some flyers, which is fine.
Yeah, you try it out. Maybe at some point Santana comes up if they need a fresh arm, see what he can do. As you said, he has a pretty live arm. Because of the PED suspension, there's no risk here, right? Just cash considerations. If he's not good or if he gets popped with another suspension, you get rid of him. But yeah, just to be honest, I didn't know they did this until I read your podcast notes like an hour ago.
Well, it was one of those. I mean, obviously not a huge move. And I actually saw it come across on Twitter live when it happened, or I probably wouldn't have noticed either. But
yeah,
I do remember Santana being pretty good. So I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then I didn't realize until I looked it up that he hadn't pitched in 2 years. So that's one of those things like Who knows?
Why not?
I'm not going to tell you I'm an expert on Santana, but his numbers are pretty good, so that's all I got for you.
Yeah.
We talked about Chris Martin hitting the IL with shoulder inflammation. Snicker did say that he might be out longer than the 10 days, but there is no structural damage, so that's a win, that he's not, like, it's not broken, just some inflammation and some soreness. But who knows? It's a shoulder. Shoulders are scary, so we don't love to see that at any level, because Chris Martin, as discussed earlier, is quite important for this team.
Yeah, you hope he's able to get back as soon as humanly possible. Again, you don't want to rush a guy. It's still April, 13th officially now as of recording this. You're going to need Chris Martin for the long haul, so if you have to give him a little bit of time now, I think you certainly make that trade-off. But they do need Chris Martin. I mean, if Martin is unable to go for a decent stretch, or if the shoulder becomes a consistent issue, or the numbness in his fingers becomes a continuing thing, it's a very legitimate problem. Let's hope that just with a little bit of rest and rehab and treatment, he's able to get over it.
Yeah, that is definitely the hope. And the other guy of grave interest is Mike Soroka, who shut down for a little while here. This happened on Wednesday of last week, so 6 days ago now as we record this. But a 2-week shutdown at least for Soroka with right shoulder inflammation. He had some discomfort when he was throwing a sim game, which is not what you want to see. Obviously, this is not the injury that he had before, which is important to note. Like, it was the Achilles, so arm issue, shoulder issue, not ever good, but maybe just a ramp-up thing. We'll see. No one seems terribly worried. Snicker's been kind of upbeat about it, but it's going to be a while because, you know, even if he's just healthy in 2 weeks, he has to ramp up. Like, he wasn't there anyway. You know what I'm saying? Like, he wasn't ready to pitch right now anyway. So you would assume he'll need a little bit longer because he's going to have to, like, ramp up a bit more. So maybe, like, mid, late May now. I don't know. I mean, we're all guessing, but we'll definitely be seeing Enoa for a little while longer. And then Bryce Wilson will be I think he's going to be staying ready. They're talking about him just kind of staying every fifth day pitching. So that maybe it might be a while for Soroka, which is not what you want to see, but hopefully it'll take him some time.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little concerning because Mike did have the shoulder issue maybe 2 years ago.
Yep.
I guess if you are looking for a silver lining a little bit, I mean, I guess it does give his Achilles a little more time to heal and recover. It's another 2 weeks. By all accounts, he's doing well in that regard.
At least he has to bat, Scott. That'd be fun.
Oh, God. What a mess. But pitchers don't have to run in extra innings if they were the last guy to come up. I didn't know about that rule.
Me either.
Until tonight.
Yeah. And by the way, neither did Chip and Jeff and Tom Glavin and I'm not picking on them because that was one of those rules that, like, I guess nobody knew because Chip was like, why is this not the pitcher or the pinch runner or something? So that was well hidden, I guess.
Only baseball. You do hope, obviously, Soroka was able to be okay. Maybe it is just some soreness. Of course, he hasn't pitched competitively in like 18 months at this point, because last year he only made the one or two starts with the Achilles injury, had a limited spring training. Really, right now, this is the equivalent of spring training for him, and you always do hear about pitchers who are shut down early in spring because they have some shoulder fatigue, whatever it is, as he shakes off the rust. So, as you said, the Braves don't seem overly concerned about it, and I don't think even if he didn't have the shoulder stuff, I don't get the sense the Braves were going to have him throw like every fifth day regardless. Like, I think they were going to incorporate a little bit of time off just to keep him fresh. Shoulders are scary, but ultimately I'm not super concerned about this.
And they have some depth. Ultimately, they're going to need him for their ceiling for sure. Soroka being right unlocks this team a lot. But for now, we'll see. Last thing. The schedule is coming this week. It never stops in baseball, of course. They have three more against the Marlins, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then a 12:20 Eastern game on Thursday. Your personal favorite, Scott, on the West Coast. Ooh. 9:20 a.m. start for you.
Breakfast
Thursday.
In the Braves. Yeah.
I guess you'll be at work, but one of those things. And then they go to Chicago for three against the Cubs over the weekend. So we will see. We'll have podcasts in the near future, as always. I believe it's a Sunday night game again this week.
Sunday night at Wrigley.
Braves fans getting excited about some more night baseball. It's really bad for podcast scheduling when the Braves play Sunday nights. I'll just say that. It's good for the fan base. I get that. But it's not what you want if you are a Sunday night Braves podcaster and is trying to record. So I don't know when the next podcast will be. It'll be sometime in the next week to 10 days. It'll be happening. We're going to be here. Road to Atlanta will be popping in as well. We'll have more content. But you got to understand, folks, there's no point in recording during a game or before or right before a game And then it becomes like tonight, and it's 12:15, and we're still talking. So,
yeah,
it's a challenge. Anyway, that's all I have for now, Scott. The Braves are 4-6. The world is not ending. Looking at the standings right now, as our final parting thought, I didn't look this up. The standings are as follows. If the internet cooperates, okay. The Phillies are 6-3. This is funny. The Mets are 2-3 right now, and they're a half game ahead of the Braves.
Yeah, the poor Mets can't play. There was the shutdown with the Nats, and then they had the horrible rainout after six pitches on Sunday afternoon. And
man, how does that happen in 2021? Like, how does that happen?
Right.
Anyway, four of the five teams in the division are under 500. So if you're that, you should be even less concerned than you were 5 minutes ago.
If you want to just remember, if the season was over today, the Baltimore Orioles, Kansas City Royals, and Detroit Tigers, I believe, would all be in the playoffs in the American League.
Oh yes.
So if you're concerned, obviously you don't want the Braves to go 4-6 the whole way. You want them to pick up a few more wins, and by all accounts, they're going to start playing better here. But yeah, it is, as I mean, again, if not to the football analogy, you are on percentages. You are just finishing up week one of the NFL season after 10 games of baseball. It's the beauty, I guess it's the beauty and the curse of baseball. It's a game every single night for 6 months, and it's such a marathon. You can't get wrapped up in one game, even if it was not super fun watching 4 hours of tonight's game. You're always 24 hours away, usually, from your next game.
Yeah, we will see more baseball on Tuesday evening, as we're recording this on Tuesday morning. The Braves are, by the way, considerable favorites on the betting market for Tuesday night's game with Max Fried on the mound. So we'll see how that goes. But thank you for listening to the podcast, everybody. Scott, thank you for joining me. Have you read anything recently that we should plug? If not, then
no. I've been slacking. I've had some real life stuff going on. Nothing bad, thankfully, but just been busy. So I haven't gotten to write much, but looking forward to settling in as the year gets going, and we'll hopefully get back to writing here soon.
Yeah, there is written content on the site always, so read all of that. Subscribe to this podcast. Follow whichever word you want to use there between subscribe and follow. Rate, review, tell your friends about the show. That's always very helpful as well. And I'll be back with either Scott or Eric or somebody else in the near future, so stay tuned for that.